try to get settled in this morning. Our first round of conventional talks for the conference. A few public service announcements. First, my name is Charles Fontenier, assistant professor at Oklahoma State University, and I'll be moderating today's session, Turf Ecology and Management. We have a fairly lengthy session, but we do have a break at 10:50. So be aware of that. This time, please silence all phones. We have a note to, if you're going to use a Twitter or anything like that, please use the hashtag ACSMTG. But at the same time, there's a restriction on photos of the presentations themselves. So just be cautious with what you're capturing there. For the speakers, we've got 15 minutes, and certainly we will try to stay within your time limits. I'll give you an indication when you have 3 minutes left, and then at 1 minute left, I'll stand up, and that'll be your indication to start working on wrapping things up. We have the microphone here, and these presentations are recorded, so please consider staying close to the microphone during the entire presentation. During question and answer, be sure to repeat the question so we get that on the mic, and keep up the last slide so it's continuing to record. And then one more thing, we have a symposium today, Water in the Urban Environment. It is in this room at 3:30, so I encourage you all to attend. There is a reception associated with that symposium. So with that, how are we doing on time? With that, I want to go ahead and start getting things warmed up. Our first speaker is Drew Penix from North Carolina State. We're speaking about the effective application timing on turf, colorant transfer, and quality.
All right. Good morning, everyone. My name is Drew Penix, research technician and graduate student at NC State. And this morning, I'd like to talk to you guys a little bit about some of the work we've been doing looking at the effect of application timing on turf colorants and how they transfer in the eventual quality of that turf colorant application. Before we get started, just a couple general uses of how we can use these products. One, we can just use them to hide unsightly chlorosis, and this can be any number of pests or nutrient stresses. We can use them to mask boundary lines on dual-use fields, on recreational fields that may have multiple sports that are used on that field. Enhanced turf color in both overseeded and non-overseeded turf, as well as in areas that don't quite have really high levels of traffic, we can use these as an alternative to winter overseeding to provide some color throughout the winter. And also, I think it's important to have some basic understanding of what is actually in these products. So there's four main ingredients. First one being is a pigment. Now, a pigment is what actually gives the product its color. They can be soluble or insoluble. For our products that have shorter lives, that is more of our soluble pigments. Water is our second ingredient here, and that's what allows us to spray these products effectively. Additives, an example of an additive with these products can be a surfactant, or any other ingredient that can help with the application of these products. With a surfactant, obviously, that's going to help spread the product across the leaf more evenly. And then finally, binder. This is typically a resin that actually adheres the pigment to the leaf surface. And that's important so we can try to avoid things that we see here, where we see transfer of colorant onto absorbent cloths, or in this case, uniforms. Now, we see this in major college athletics. This may not be that big of a deal because, you know, there's a lot of money involved here and they have money to replace these uniforms. But when we get into our lower level of athletics, recreational leagues, this can be a pretty large cost in replacing athletes' uniforms. So real quick, this is a snapshot of a brief screening we did a couple years ago as part of a larger project where we looked at just two colorant products, and we applied each one at a warm and a cold air temperature. And we only looked at this 3 days after application. But real quick, what we saw was when we applied these at the cooler temperature, transfer of the pigment onto an absorbent cloth was much higher. So this kind of got our minds thinking, and it's what led to the primary research objective that we're going to talk about today, and where we evaluated the effect of air temperature of on colorant transfer of seven different colorants onto absorbent material. And at the end, we're going to talk a little bit about of another issue we looked at, and looking at leaf wetness and if that affects the overall quality of a turf colorant application. So real quick, looking at some of the materials and methods for our transfer study, we did this in Raleigh, North Carolina, on two species of turf, being El Toro and also Tipway. We chose the highest labeled rate in terms of paint per acre for seven different products. And we applied each of these products in three air temperatures, one being 25 degrees, secondly 45 degrees, and thirdly 60 degrees Fahrenheit. And after each application, we sampled these at 1, 2, 4, and 7 days application. And this was our sampling technique. Up here in the top left, we see our treated plot. And prior to taking our sample, we would treat these plots with water. Now, we were doing this to try to promote kind of a worst-case scenario here, so we can try to get as much. We were trying to promote, see how much colorant we could actually get off of the surface. So we wrapped a paper towel around a small piece of wood that had a 10-pound weight on top, and we would drag that across the length of the plot, and we would get a sample over here that looked like this. And with that, you can see the three samplings that we took across the cloth here with an NDVI meter, and we averaged those to get one composite average of colorant transfer. So this is what we saw here. Set this up, the x-axis is days after application, and our y-axis is the amount of colorant that was transferred. Now this is all products averaged together at each application timing. And what we can see here, what really jumps out at us, when we apply these at 25 degrees, we saw where colorant transfer was much higher. And then once we got to 45, we see that there wasn't a whole lot of difference. But like I said, what really jumps out at the colder temperature, we really saw a lot of transfer. This is maybe a little difficult to see in the back, but this is kind of an overview of all the products at each application that we made. To set up this figure here, the dotted line that you see going across each application timing, that is the threshold that we set as an acceptable amount of colorant transfer. And specifically looking at the cold application, we can see where most all products were above this threshold, with the exception of one product that actually stayed below that threshold value the entire week after application. Once we get over to our intermediate application here, we saw where our transfer values really went down here, specifically with three products that were much, or they were way under that transfer threshold that we set as acceptable. Individually looking at a couple products here, again, world class here, when we applied it at least 45, we see where at each sampling interval, colorant transfer was acceptable, but when we applied it in our cooler temperature, we can see where it took up to 6 days to reach that acceptable threshold. Moving on to Harrell's here, again, we can see where it took up to 4 days after our application to reach that acceptable amount of colorant transfer. And here's our one product where we saw at any application temperature, it was not acceptable until a week after we applied it. So, like I said, what we saw here, when we applied these products in a cooler temperature, we saw much higher amounts of colorant transfer. Now we're going to get into, we're switching gears a little bit, and we're going to talk about the second objective, and where we looked at leaf wetness and if this affected the overall quality of the colorant application. Again, we did this at our research station in Raleigh, North Carolina, again on two species of turf. We also chose the highest rate again for the four products that we used. And what we did here, we used a split plot experimental design here, and we split half the plot with irrigation and without simulated irrigation. And how this affected color here. On the x-axis are our four different products, and again on the y-axis is our colorant color. So that's just the values that we how we rated these products. In the first two products on the left here, we can see where applying irrigation really did not affect the overall overall color of these products. But when we move over here further to the right, we can see where there was a bit of a difference when we had irrigation, where we applied irrigation before applying these colorant products. Now this is our colorant intensity rating, which is essentially how much product is actually covering the treated surface. So it's just the percent visual coverage rating. Again, in Dern and Harrell's, we don't see a really big difference here with irrigation or no irrigation. But once we get over to Green Longer, we see where applying irrigation actually increased our colorant intensity ratings. And to kind of visually see this data, this is in Dern. We can see where irrigation, no irrigation, there may be a slight difference there, but visually, those plots look pretty similar. With Harrell's, again, maybe a slight difference with no irrigation, but again, these look pretty similar. Where we really start to see the big difference here is with one of the products that we saw on the further right part of our previous graphs, where applying irrigation really helped here. We don't get the streaking that we did when we did not put any irrigation down before treatment. Now specifically, this may be a little difficult to see, but we took some leaf samples from these plots. And on the left, where we didn't have any irrigation, you can see more colorant on these leaves, but it's really splotchy, okay? You just see small specks, but it's more visible on these samples, whereas where we treated with irrigation prior to application on the right here, that pigment is more evenly spread across that leaf. It may be tough to see in this photo here, but it's more evenly spread across the leaf. So what do we attribute this to? Each of these four products, we tested a couple years back as far as the thickness of these products. And our Harrell's and Endurant product, we see are lower, have lower amounts of product viscosity. And those were the products that we saw where irrigation really did not make much of a difference. But with Ultrador Super and Green Longer, you see these products are much more viscous, at least 5 times more viscous than Harrell's and Endurant. So that tells us irrigation may not affect products that are not quite as thick, but if you have a product that is higher, is much more viscous, applying irrigation before colorant application may help the overall quality. So in summary, we saw that air temperature can greatly affect colorant transfer. When we apply these at 25 degrees, we saw where colorant transfer was much higher. And with leaf wetness, we saw where that really made a difference when you're applying a product that is much more viscous. So higher viscosity, applying irrigation before you go out and make your colorant application can help the overall quality. So with that, I will open it up to any questions.
And we've got time for a few questions.
First, right here.
How do you explain the fact that colder temperatures have more of an effect? The material doesn't clear the surface as well when it's cold.
That would be my best explanation, is that at the colder temperatures, maybe the binder is not as effective in adhering the pigment to the leaf surface. There, obviously, like I said, there is some effect there, but that's my best guess, in that once you get to that low of an air temperature, the binder is not nearly as effective as when you're applied in a warmer air temperature. Strictly dormant grasses. So there's another question.
I'm just curious about your threshold of acceptable. What was it, 0.03?
0.03.
I'm just curious how you came up with that.
So after many, many drags that we have done with this testing color transfer, we essentially set them all out on a table over the years, old samples, and we sat there and picked out what we thought was an acceptable amount of colorant transfer.
Let's hold on for a moment. All students should stick around, and we'll have a chance for questions maybe at the break. But let's thank our speaker right now.